Anne Frank's diary stands as one of the most powerful testimonies of the Holocaust, offering an intimate glimpse into the mind of a young Jewish girl hiding from Nazi persecution. Since its publication in 1947, The Diary of a Young Girl has been translated into more than 70 languages and sold over 30 million copies worldwide. Anne's words have moved generations, including figures like Nelson Mandela, who read it while imprisoned on Robben Island, and Emma Watson, who called it one of the most profound texts of our time. Beyond its historical significance, the diary continues to resonate because of its universal themes of adolescence, hope, and the indomitable human spirit that shine through even the darkest circumstances. On July 6, 1942, the Frank family disappeared from their Amsterdam apartment, leaving behind their cat Morcha and a deliberately messy home to suggest a hasty departure. In reality, they had meticulously planned their disappearance for months, gradually moving furniture and necessities to a hidden apartment, the secret annex, at 263 Prinsengracht, where Otto Frank's business operated. 13-year-old Anne, her sister Margot, and their parents would spend the next 2 years hiding there, joined by the Van Don family and later by dentist Mr. Dussel. The secret annex was ingeniously concealed behind a bookcase in the office building. During business hours, the 8 inhabitants had to remain absolutely silent to avoid detection by warehouse workers below. They couldn't run water, flush toilets, or even walk around normally until the workers left in the evening. Windows were blacked out or covered with heavy curtains, with only tiny cracks to glimpse the outside world. A small group of loyal employees, Miep Gies, Johannes Kleiman, Victor Kugler, and Bep Foscoil, risked their lives daily to bring food, news, and supplies to the hidden families. Despite these restrictions, they established a routine. Mornings began with strict silence, afternoons with radio broadcasts and lessons, and evenings with a bit more freedom. Anne described their meals deteriorating as the war progressed, from decent fare to increasingly meager portions of rotten vegetables and moldy bread. The physical confinement was challenging, but perhaps more difficult was the psychological toll of living in constant fear, unable to step outside or breathe fresh air for years. Anne wrote poignantly of watching the seasons change through a window and seeing the chestnut tree bloom, her only connection to the natural world she so desperately missed. What makes Anne's diary extraordinary is not just its historical context, but the vibrant personality that leaps from its pages. Far from being a simple chronology of events, it reveals the rich inner life of an insightful, passionate teenager grappling with both ordinary adolescent concerns and extraordinary circumstances. Anne begins her diary addressing it as Kitty, creating an imaginary friend to whom she could confide her deepest thoughts, a brilliant solution to her intense loneliness. This literary device transforms her writing from mere journal entries into intimate conversations, allowing her to express herself with remarkable candor and depth. Anne's self-awareness is striking, especially for a teenager. She recognizes her own contradictions with remarkable clarity, describing herself as a bundle of contradictions, with two distinct selves, the outgoing, chatty Anne that others see, and the thoughtful, sensitive Anne she considers her true self. "I'm split in two," she writes. "One side contains my exuberant cheerfulness, my flippancy, my joy in life. The other side, the better and deeper side, isn't accessible to everyone." This duality becomes a recurring theme throughout her writings as she struggles to reconcile her public and private personas while confined in the secret annex. Her emotional intelligence extends beyond self-reflection to those around her. She keenly observes the adults' foibles with the sharp eye of a natural psychologist. Mrs. Van Don's flirtatiousness and vanity, Mr. Dussel's pedantic habits and rigid routines, her mother's critical nature and emotional distance, with a mixture of frustration and compassion. She captures the mounting tensions of 8 people living in cramped quarters, documenting their petty squabbles over food portions, bathroom schedules, and noise levels. She writes candidly about her complicated relationship with her mother, admitting, I'm not in love with Mother. I just don't love her, while simultaneously wrestling with guilt over these feelings and worrying if she's being fair. This honesty about family tensions makes her account particularly authentic and relatable across generations. Throughout the diary, we witness Anne's remarkable intellectual growth and her passionate pursuit of knowledge despite her confinement. She devours books on history, mythology, and literature, creating her own curriculum of self-education. She teaches herself shorthand and multiple languages, practices her writing skills through stories and essays, and develops sophisticated political and social views. Her feminist consciousness emerges strongly, writing, "Women should be respected as well, for they endure sickness, weakness, and motherhood, not to mention the fact that they must bear the brunt of male self-conceit." Her ambition to become a journalist or writer shines through her increasingly sophisticated prose as she revises and edits her diary entries with professional dedication. Even in hiding, she maintains her determination to make her mark on the world, dreaming of publishing her writings after the war and leaving behind a legacy that would indeed far exceed her wildest expectations. Perhaps the most touching aspect of Anne's diary is watching her navigate adolescence under extraordinary circumstances. Despite being confined to the secret annex, Anne experiences the universal milestones of growing up: physical changes, crushes, identity formation, and conflicts with parents. She writes candidly about menstruation, sexuality, and her changing body, topics that were taboo in the 1940s. Her detailed accounts of these changes reveal both her vulnerability and her determination to understand herself, often expressing frustration at the lack of resources or people to discuss these intimate matters with. When Peter von Dahn, the teenage son of the other family in hiding, becomes the object of Anne's affection, we witness the blossoming of first love in the most unlikely setting. Their relationship evolves from mutual irritation to friendship and eventually to romance, providing a stark contrast to the darkness of their circumstances. Anne describes their conversations in the attic, their first kiss, and her conflicted feelings with the emotional intensity characteristic of teenage love. "I think spring is inside me," she writes. "I feel it in my entire body and soul." She documents their daily encounters with meticulous detail, from stolen glances during mealtimes to their private conversations about books, life, and their dreams for the future. Their romance becomes both a source of joy and concern for the adults, who worry about the propriety of two teenagers growing close in such confined quarters. Anne's relationship with her parents undergoes significant transformation as she strives for independence. She struggles against her mother's criticism, which she perceives as constant and unfair, and her father's tendency to treat her as a child. Their conflicts range from disagreements about her behavior at the dinner table to deeper issues about her emerging identity as a young woman. In a particularly poignant passage, she writes a letter to her father explaining her need for autonomy, later regretting its harshness when he responds with hurt. This push-pull between dependence and independence is familiar to any teenager, though Anne's circumstances make it uniquely painful. She must balance her desire for freedom with the reality that her very survival depends on remaining hidden and following strict rules. Throughout these normal adolescent experiences, Anne maintains an extraordinary perspective. She recognizes the privilege of being alive when so many Jews were being deported to concentration camps. She writes, "I don't think of all the misery, but of the beauty that still remains," showing a wisdom beyond her years. Her diary entries oscillate between typical teenage concerns, her appearance, her crushes, her future ambitions as a writer, and profound reflections on human nature, war, and survival. She develops a remarkable ability to find moments of joy even while aware of the desperate situation outside their hiding place. Her determination to continue her education, maintain her friendships, and pursue her passion for writing demonstrates an inspiring resilience that transcends her age and circumstances. While Anne often focuses on daily life and personal growth, the specter of the Holocaust looms over every page. Through radio broadcasts and reports from their helpers, particularly from Jan Gies and Johannes Kleiman, the residents of the secret annex learn about the escalating persecution of Jews. Anne writes about the dreadful things happening outside. Jews being taken away in droves, families separated, children left orphaned. She describes hearing the heavy boots of German soldiers on the streets below, forcing them into complete silence during working hours, and the terrifying moments when unfamiliar footsteps approached their hiding place. The diary provides a unique perspective on the Holocaust as it was unfolding. Unlike historical accounts written after the fact, Anne records events as they happen, without knowing the ultimate outcome. She writes of hearing about gas chambers, but wondering if these reports could possibly be true, reflecting the widespread disbelief among Jews that such atrocities could occur in modern Europe. Her entries detail the gradual disappearance of friends and neighbors, the implementation of increasingly harsh anti-Jewish measures, and the growing desperation of those trying to find safe hiding places. This immediacy gives her account a raw power that retrospective histories cannot match. Anne's Jewish identity becomes increasingly important to her during hiding. Initially, she thinks of herself primarily as Dutch, but as she witnesses the persecution of Jews, she develops a deeper connection to her heritage. She questions why being Jewish should make her different from her non-Jewish friends, and struggles to understand the historical persecution of her people. She writes passionately about anti-Semitism, questioning why Jews are singled out for hatred, and expressing hope that they will emerge from suffering as better people rather than bitter ones. Her reflections show remarkable maturity as she grapples with complex questions of identity, faith, and belonging. The diary also captures the psychological impact of living under constant threat. Anne describes nightmares about being discovered, anxiety attacks during air raids, and the strain of never knowing if today might be the day that Gestapo arrives. She details the physical manifestations of this stress, loss of appetite, insomnia, and constant tension headaches that afflicted all the residents. The confined space of the annex intensifies these fears, with every unexpected sound causing panic. Yet remarkably, she maintains hope for the future, writing, "I still believe, in spite of everything, that people are truly good at heart." She finds solace in writing, in watching the changing seasons through the attic window, and in dreaming of a future career as a writer or journalist. The war's progression is tracked through Anne's entries about Allied advances, bombing raids over Amsterdam, and the D-Day invasion, which brings both hope and increased anxiety as the Nazi occupation becomes more desperate and brutal. She records the growing food shortages, the deteriorating health of the annex residents, and the increasing risks taken by their Dutch protectors to keep them supplied and informed. Life in the secret annex was defined by its physical constraints. 8 people shared a space never intended for habitation, with thin walls that offered little privacy. Anne vividly describes the challenges of this arrangement, the impossibility of escaping conflicts, the frustration of sharing limited resources, and the strain of constant proximity. The living quarters were divided into small rooms, with the Franks occupying one area, the Van Dons another, and Mr. Dussel sharing a room with Anne. She details the daily irritations of this arrangement, particularly her frustration with Dussel's habits, his hogging of the small desk they shared, his snoring, and his monopolization of the bathroom at set times each day. Food became an increasing source of tension as the war progressed. Anne describes the meticulous division of rations, with accusations of favoritism or theft creating bitter arguments. The Van Tons were particularly sensitive about food distribution, leading to heated exchanges over items as small as a spoonful of cooking oil or an extra slice of bread. The inability to go outside took a tremendous psychological toll. Anne writes longingly about nature, fresh air, and the freedom to move without constraint. She describes standing in the attic at night, breathing through a crack in the window, as one of her few pleasures. The chestnut tree, visible from the attic window, becomes a symbol of the natural world she's been cut off from, and she notes its seasonal changes with almost religious devotion. Perhaps most difficult was the lack of solitude. Anne, who craved time alone to write and think, had virtually no privacy. She often retreated to the attic for moments of quiet reflection, but even these were frequently interrupted. Her diary became her only truly private space, a place where she could express herself without judgment or interruption. The survival of the secret annex residence depended entirely on a small group of Otto Frank's employees who risked their lives daily to protect them. Miep Gies, Johannes Kleiman, Victor Kugler, and Bep Voskweil emerge as quiet heroes in Anne's account, bringing food, news, books, and moral support to the hidden families. These helpers faced enormous risks. Discovery would mean not only arrest for themselves, but certain deportation and likely death for those they protected. Yet they never wavered in their commitment. Anne writes with particular affection about Miep, who brought magazines, books, and occasionally special treats like strawberries or a cake for birthdays. Beyond practical assistance, Miep provided emotional support, bringing news of the outside world and maintaining a connection to normal life. The helpers also served as intermediaries for practical matters, handling the black market purchases necessary for survival, dealing with medical issues, and managing the business that provided cover for the hiding place. When Mr. Kleiman fell ill with stomach bleeding or Bep caught the flu, the anxiety in the annex was palpable, as their absence created dangerous gaps in the support system. Anne recognized the extraordinary nature of their assistance, writing, "Our helpers are a very good example. They have pulled us through up till now and will hopefully bring us safely to dry land." She understood that these individuals represented humanity at its best during a time when so many chose to look away from injustice. After the arrest of the annex residents, Miep Gies found Anne's diary scattered on the floor and preserved it, later giving it to Otto Frank when he returned as the sole survivor. Without her act of preservation, Anne's voice would have been silenced forever. Throughout her confinement, Anne maintained ambitious plans for her future. Far from seeing herself as merely a victim of circumstances, she actively prepared for life after liberation. She pursued a rigorous course of self-education, studying languages, literature, history, and shorthand. She wrote, "I want to be useful or bring enjoyment to all people, even those I've never met. I want to go on living even after my death." Her passion for writing grew stronger during her time in hiding. What began as personal diary entries evolved into more polished prose as she began to see herself as a future author. After hearing a radio broadcast about collecting wartime accounts, Anne began editing her diary with publication in mind, even creating pseudonyms for the annex residents. She wrote short stories, started a novel called Caddy's Life, and composed fairy tales. Anne's professional ambitions were remarkably specific for a teenager. She wrote, "I want to publish a book entitled Het Achterhaus, The Secret Annex, After the War. Whether I shall succeed or not, I cannot say, but my diary will be a great help." She imagined herself as a journalist and writer who would make a difference in the world through her words. Beyond career aspirations, Anne dreamed of normal teenage experiences, riding a bike again, attending school, having friends her age. She fantasized about going to Paris and London to study after the war. These ordinary dreams take on poignant significance against the backdrop of her extraordinary circumstances. Anne also had deeper aspirations for personal growth. She wrote extensively about wanting to become a better person, more patient, less judgmental, more understanding of others. She reflected on her own flaws with remarkable honesty and constantly pushed herself to improve. How noble and good everyone could be if, at the end of each day, they were to review their own behavior and weigh up the rights and wrongs, she wrote. Anne's diary ends abruptly on August 1, 1944, with poignant reflections on her inner and outer selves, contemplating the duality of her nature, the carefree girl she presented to others versus her deeper, more contemplative inner self. 3 days later, on August 4, the secret annex was raided by the German security police, Grünpolizei, following what investigators believe was a tip from an informant. The identity of this informant remains one of the most debated aspects of Anne's story, with theories ranging from warehouse worker Wilhelm von Marin to cleaning lady Lena Hartog von Bladeren, though no conclusive evidence has ever emerged. The eight residents and two of their helpers, Victor Kugler and Johannes Kleiman, were arrested in a terrifying morning raid. The Gestapo, led by SS Oberschaffuhrer Karl Josef Silberbauer, forced the hiding place's bookcase entrance open and discovered the families. They were given mere minutes to gather belongings before being taken away. Miep Gies and Bep Fosquile, who were working downstairs, were left behind and later managed to salvage Anne's diary and loose papers, keeping them safe until Otto Frank's return. The families were first sent to Westerbork Transit Camp in the Netherlands, where they were placed in the punishment barracks for prisoners caught hiding. On September 3, 1944, they were deported to Auschwitz-Birkenau on the last transport ever to leave Westerbork, crammed into cattle cars with 1,019 other prisoners. The journey took 3 days and nights of hellish conditions. Upon arrival, the men and women were immediately separated on the selection platform, marking the last time many family members would see each other. Otto Frank survived Auschwitz through a combination of luck, resilience, and his ability to work in the camp's administration. Hermann von Pels was selected for the gas chambers shortly after arrival. Auguste von Pels was eventually transferred to Bergen-Belsen, then to Theresienstadt, where she likely perished. Peter von Pels died at Mauthausen in May 1945. Anne's mother, Edith, died of starvation at Auschwitz in January 1945, having given most of her food rations to her daughters. Anne and Margot were transferred to Bergen-Belsen in late October 1944. Fellow prisoners, including Hannelie Goslar and Nanette Blitz, later reported seeing the sisters there, describing them as two bundles of rags, already severely weakened by hunger and cold. The camp was overcrowded and disease-ridden, with minimal shelter during an unusually harsh winter. Both sisters contracted typhus and died within days of each other in February or March 1945. The exact date remains unknown, but it was mere weeks before British troops liberated the camp on April 15, 1945. The tragic timing of their deaths, so close to liberation, adds a particularly cruel dimension to their story. Anne had written optimistically in her final diary entries about returning to school in October 1944, inspired by the Allied invasion of Normandy and the approaching front lines. Her last written words expressed hope for becoming more than I ever was before. Her dreams of reunion with friends, pursuing a career as a writer, and seeing her diary published were all cut short, transforming her personal account into not just a record of survival, but a powerful testament to unfulfilled potential and the human cost of hatred and persecution. When Otto Frank returned to Amsterdam after the war, Miep Gies gave him Anne's diary and papers she had saved. Reading it was his first insight into his daughter's rich inner life. Despite his initial reluctance to share such personal writings, he was persuaded that Anne's voice deserved to be heard. The diary was first published in Dutch in 1947 as Het Achterhuis, The Secret Annex, exactly as Anne had hoped to title it. The diary's impact has been immeasurable. Beyond its historical value as a Holocaust document, it has helped humanize the statistics of genocide by giving one victim a voice that speaks directly to readers across generations. Anne's observations about human nature, her struggles with identity, and her unwavering hope despite circumstances have universal resonance. The Anne Frank House in Amsterdam, where the secret annex is preserved, welcomes over 1 million visitors annually. Educational programs based on Anne's diary teach tolerance and human rights in schools worldwide. Her words have inspired countless books, plays, films, and art, becoming a cultural touchstone for discussions about persecution and resilience. Perhaps most remarkably, Anne achieved exactly what she hoped for when she wrote, "I want to go on living even after my death." Through her diary, she has indeed continued to live, touching millions of lives and fulfilling her desire to be useful or bring enjoyment to all people. Her voice, honest, passionate, and deeply human, continues to echo across time, reminding us of both the darkest and brightest possibilities of human nature. In one of her most famous passages, Anne wrote, "I still believe, in spite of everything, that people are truly good at heart." This statement, coming from a girl who would soon face the worst of human cruelty, stands as a profound challenge to cynicism and despair. It is this enduring hope, this refusal to surrender to bitterness despite every justification, that makes Anne Frank's legacy so powerful and ensures her diary will continue to inspire generations to come.